Leatherlark has become the latest sensation in the romance thriller genre, with celebrities like Reese Witherspoon and Taylor Swift reportedly unable to put it down. This darkly comedic tale of vigilante justice and unexpected love has taken BookTok by storm, amassing over 100 million views and counting. What makes this book so irresistibly captivating is its perfect blend of steamy romance, vigilante justice, and pitch-black humor that keeps readers on the edge between horror and hilarity. As author Brynn Weaver's popularity continues to soar, this story of a woman who kills predators, falling for a reluctant hitman, has redefined the boundaries of romantic suspense, proving that sometimes the most intense connections form between the most dangerous people. Lark Montague isn't your typical protagonist. When we first meet her, she's tying her cheating boyfriend Andrew to a chair in a meadow with fireworks strapped between his thighs. As Katy Perry's Firework plays ironically in the background, Lark lights the fuse. Not just because he cheated with their friend Savannah, but because she discovered messages to underage girls on his phone. Andrew is a predator, and Lark has appointed herself as karma's backup bitch. This opening scene sets the tone for Lark's character, a woman who eliminates sexual predators with theatrical flair and zero remorse. Her vigilante justice stems from trauma at Ashbourne Collegiate Institute, where a predator named Laurent Verdon once made pretty promises to students. Though we don't immediately learn all the details, we understand that something terrible happened there, something that eventually led her friend Sloane to kill Verdon. Lark's next target is Jamie Merrick, a teacher who solicited her fake teenage persona online. After forcing his car into Scituate Reservoir, her vehicle is damaged, prompting her to call her stepfather for cleanup assistance. He reluctantly provides a code for a service called Leviathan, warning her they're dangerous people. When the cleanup crew arrives, one of the men, whom Lark nicknames Budget Batman for his gruff demeanor, accuses her of being a perfect little princess who doesn't care about the innocent man she killed, unaware that Jamie was actually a predator. Despite her pleas, Batman forces Lark into his trunk for her safety. Using skills taught by her stepfather, she escapes when the vehicle slows for a turn. This encounter, seemingly a minor incident in Lark's vigilante career, will prove to be a pivotal moment in her life, though she doesn't yet know it. What makes Lark such a compelling character is the contrast between her cheerful exterior and her lethal actions. She approaches murder with the same enthusiasm others might bring to a hobby, creating macabre trophies from her victims, a bootlace coaster with a wine stain, maracas filled with human teeth, a severed finger in a mason jar turned into a festive snow globe. Yet beneath this disturbing creativity lies a protective instinct that drives her mission, so that no one I love has to do it for me ever again. 1 year after the Reservoir incident, we meet Lachlan Kane in his boss Leander's basement, reluctantly participating in a happy hour that involves throwing darts at a captive drug dealer. Unlike Lark, who kills with righteous purpose, Lachlan is trapped in a world of violence he desperately wants to escape. Leander, his manipulative boss, reminisces about finding the Kane brothers years ago after Lachlan had killed their father, a pivotal moment that bound Lachlan to Leviathan's service. When Lachlan expresses his desire to retire, Leander refuses, citing a mistake with Blunder Barbie, a relative of Damian Kovaci, that damaged their business relationships. Unless Lachlan can repair that damage, he's trapped indefinitely. The contrast between Lark and Lachlan is striking. She kills by choice, driven by a personal mission of justice, while he kills by obligation, trapped in a cycle of violence he longs to escape. Yet both are skilled at compartmentalizing their actions, presenting different faces to the world while harboring dark secrets. Lachlan's world is further complicated when he attends a gathering and is immediately captivated by a beautiful blue-eyed woman with honey-colored waves, Lark Montague. Despite his attempts to maintain his usual aloof demeanor, he finds himself drawn to her energy and warmth. Their flirtatious banter on the balcony quickly escalates to a passionate kiss, until Lark freezes at his Irish exclamation, "Feckin' Christ Jesus!" She recognizes him as Budget Batman, the man who once threw her in his trunk. Their flirtation immediately transforms into mutual hostility, though an undeniable attraction remains. What makes this encounter so compelling is the irony. Neither realizes they're both killers, each assuming the other represents a moral judgment they can't bear. This misunderstanding forms the foundation of their antagonistic relationship, even as they're drawn to each other like moths to flame. While Lark and Lachlan navigate their complicated attraction, a sinister figure, referred to only as the Phantom, breaks into what appears to be the apartment of Sloane and her fiancé Rowan, Lachlan's brother. Guided by religious scripture and dark intentions, this intruder has been meticulously observing the couple, tracking their routines and activities. When the Phantom discovers a photograph showing Rowan, Sloane, Lark, and Lachlan together, a vengeful plan forms to cause maximum suffering by making Lachlan appear responsible for whatever harm befalls Lark, the cherished daughter of two empires of sin and the beloved friend of the Orb Weaver. The motivation appears to be religious retribution, quoting scripture about recompense and punishment. This introduction of a third player transforms the narrative from a character study of two killers into a deadly game. The Phantom's presence creates an external threat that will eventually force Lark and Lachlan together, despite their mutual antagonism. The biblical references, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, suggest a personal vendetta against this group, adding layers of mystery to the unfolding plot. What's particularly chilling about the Phantom is the methodical nature of their surveillance and planning. Unlike Lark's impulsive, emotionally driven killings or Lachlan's reluctant professional hits, the Phantom operates with cold calculation, driven by a twisted sense of divine purpose. This creates a three-dimensional moral landscape where different types of killers with different motivations will eventually collide. 1 year after their hostile encounter, Lark visits her great-aunt Ethel's coastal home. While retrieving lotion from the downstairs bathroom, she overhears a disturbing conversation between her mother, stepfather Damien, and Stan Tremblay. They're discussing a pattern of murders occurring every 40 days, targeting people connected to both their families. Tremblay suggests Lachlan Kane might be responsible, and they debate whether to eliminate the Kane brothers without concrete proof. Horrified that her parents might harm Rowan and separate him from her friend Sloane, Lark desperately wants to warn them but doesn't know how to stand against her powerful family. When she expresses her determination to protect Sloane, Ethel hints at a solution, implying Lark could marry Lachlan herself to protect him and, by extension, Rowan and Sloane. This setup creates a perfect storm of conflicting emotions and motivations. Lark, who once despised Lachlan, must now consider marrying him to protect her friend's happiness. The irony is delicious. The vigilante who kills predators must now protect a professional killer from her own family's vengeance. At Leytonstone Inn, Lark approaches Lachlan with her proposal. She offers to help him retire from dangerous freelance work by securing contracts for his boss, both the Lost Kovachi contract and a new one from her family's Montague Muffins business. Despite his initial amusement at the idea of a muffin empire needing security contracts, Lark insists the food industry is ruthless. When Lachlan presses for details, Lark reveals the truth. Someone is killing her family's business associates, and they suspect Lachlan might be responsible. Her shocking solution? Marriage. Only by becoming her husband can he guarantee his safety, and possibly his brother's as well. Her family takes marriage vows seriously and wouldn't risk hurting her by targeting her husband. Without me, Lachlan Kane, you're gonna die, and I can't guarantee the reckoning will stop at you, she warns before walking away, giving him until the end of the night to decide. This proposal creates a perfect force proximity scenario, two people who are intensely attracted to each other but have every reason to distrust one another must now pretend to be in love. The stakes couldn't be higher. Lachlan's life and his brother's happiness hang in the balance, while Lark must betray her family to protect her friend. Despite their mutual antagonism, Lark and Lachlan proceed with the wedding. As Ethel places her heirloom yellow diamond ring on Lark's finger, she offers unexpected wisdom. Being in love is not enough. Choosing love is what it takes, she tells Lark. You are choosing love, and I am so proud of you, with a meaningful glance toward Rowan and Sloane. During the ceremony, despite her internal panic, I'm marrying Lachlan Kane, Boston's biggest asshole. This is probably crazier than blowing someone up with fireworks. Lark maintains her composure. When Lachlan whispers in Irish, I promise to be a faithful husband to you as long as we live together. Before kissing her, the moment becomes unexpectedly emotional. Lark kisses him back as though I'm saying goodbye to something that was never mine in the first place, because I'm choosing love, just not my own. This sacrifice, choosing others' happiness over her own, reveals the depth of Lark's character beneath her cheerful vigilante exterior. Despite her cavalier attitude toward killing predators, she's willing to bind herself to a man she believes despises her to protect those she loves. As they settle into married life, the boundaries between pretense and reality begin to blur. Lachlan becomes increasingly protective of Lark, especially after discovering her box of trophies from previous kills. When he directly asks if she's a serial killer, Lark cheerfully corrects him, calling herself a multiple deleter who has eliminated 10 people. What makes their relationship so compelling is how their dark secrets become the foundation for genuine intimacy. Unlike others in their lives who know only their public personas, they see each other's true natures, the good and the monstrous, and find acceptance rather than judgment. When Lark bitterly explains she hasn't told Sloane or Rowan about her killings because she loves them and doesn't want to disappoint them, but since Lachlan already thinks the worst of her, his judgment doesn't matter, she unknowingly creates the perfect conditions for authentic connection. This dynamic, where their darkest secrets become the bridge between them rather than a barrier, subverts traditional romance tropes. Instead of falling in love despite their flaws, they fall in love because of their complete acceptance of each other's darkness. As Lark and Lachlan's relationship evolves from antagonistic to intimate, they must still solve the mystery of who's killing people connected to both their families. With access to Leviathan's intelligence systems, they begin investigating Bob Foster, Ethel's nemesis, searching through financial records for evidence connecting him to the murders. Their investigation takes a dark turn when they discover that Stan Tremblay, Ethel's enforcer, has been murdered. Code 100, homicide. This death makes everything more real for Lark, including the uncertain future of her relationship with Lachlan. As they grow closer, Lachlan admits what he likes most about her is her bravery. You're afraid you'll lose someone? You dive headfirst into a crazy plan to marry a broody asshat you hate just to save them. You're afraid of my crazy boss? You give him drugged muffins. Their investigation leads them to Dr. Lewis Campbell, the headmaster of Ashbourne Collegiate Institute, who ignored reports about Laurent Verdon's predatory behavior toward students, including Lark and Sloane. After confronting him with evidence of his negligence, Lark sews Campbell's lips shut with gold thread before executing him, a gruesome yet poetic form of justice for the man who silenced victims' complaints. What makes this investigation compelling is how it forces them to confront their pasts while building their future together. For Lark, confronting Campbell means revisiting the trauma of Ashbourne and the events that turned her into a vigilante. For Lachlan, helping Lark means acknowledging his growing feelings for her beyond their arrangement of convenience. Their partnership in both investigation and murder creates an intimacy that transcends conventional romance. They're not just sharing their bodies, but their darkest impulses and most vulnerable moments. When Lachlan crafts a trophy from Campbell for Lark, his heart preserved in resin, it's a gesture of acceptance more profound than any conventional romantic gesture. As Lark and Lachlan grow closer, the Phantom's plan accelerates. 2 weeks after killing Stan Tremblay, the Phantom visits Ethel in what appears to be a hospital or care facility. Despite her frail condition, Ethel immediately recognizes the murderous intent and faces death with defiant humor. Before she dies from a lorazepam overdose, Ethel warns, "Touch my Lark and he'll kill you." The Phantom responds with anticipation, "I'm sure hoping he'll try." After Ethel's death, a seemingly friendly client from Lachlan's leatherworking shop, Abe Midas, approaches Lark after her musical performance. His biblical quotes and disconnected smile make her uncomfortable, but she doesn't recognize the danger until it's too late. When she returns home, Abe has broken into her apartment. He injects her with something as her dog Bentley tries to protect her. When Lachlan discovers Lark missing, Connor reveals shocking news. He's decrypted Stan's security footage showing the killer used one of Lachlan's leatherworking tools. The murderer is Abe Midas, who is actually Abe Mead, brother of Harvey Mead, who was killed by Rowan and Sloan in Texas. His religious fanaticism and quest for vengeance have driven him to target those connected to his brother's killers. Lark wakes in complete darkness, drugged and disoriented, trapped in a metal chamber, a rotary batch oven. Abe reveals his twisted plan for vengeance. He's placed a bomb under Rowan's car and presents Lachlan with an impossible choice: save Lark or save his brother. This climactic confrontation brings all the narrative threads together. The Phantom's identity and motivation are revealed: religious vengeance for his brother's death. Lachlan must choose between saving his wife or his brother, testing the depth of his feelings for Lark. And Lark, faced with certain death, tells Lachlan to save Rowan instead, proving that her initial motivation for their marriage, protecting Sloane's happiness with Rowan, remains true even in her darkest hour. Despite Lark's selfless command, Lachlan refuses to abandon her. With Rose's help, they manage to break the oven window and pull Lark from the scorching heat while Abe lies dead with a bullet between his eyes. When Rose confirms Rowan and Sloane are safe, Lachlan holds Lark, trembling with emotion, and vows never to let her go, transforming their marriage of convenience into a genuine declaration of love. In the aftermath of Abe's death, Lark signs the Kovachi contract, officially ending Lachlan's tenure with Leviathan. Their business arrangement complete, they face the question of what happens next. Rather than simply continuing their marriage, Lachlan surprises Lark with a safe containing her recovered trophies, including a new one: Dr. Louis Campbell's heart preserved in resin, alongside divorce papers and honeymoon tickets to Indonesia. Kneeling before her, Lachlan explains he wants her to truly choose this marriage rather than one she entered to save others. In a moment of perfect symmetry with Ethel's earlier wisdom about choosing love, Lark tears up the divorce papers, declaring she chooses him, and Lachlan slips a diamond band onto her finger above her wedding set. This final choice transforms their relationship from an arrangement of mutual benefit to a genuine partnership based on complete acceptance. Unlike conventional romances where characters fall in love despite their flaws, Lark and Lachlan fall in love because they fully embrace each other's darkness. Their marriage isn't about redemption or changing each other, it's about finding someone who sees your true self, even the monstrous parts, and chooses you anyway. The epilogue reveals that Rose was critically injured during Lark's rescue, seeing Finn, Lachlan's brother, as her world brightens to white light, suggesting her death, but also the possibility of another love story. Meanwhile, Lark and Lachlan's honeymoon in Indonesia shows their relationship continuing to evolve, with playful power dynamics and deep trust. When Lachlan removes his wedding band for diving, despite having tattooed a star on his finger, Lark decides to get vengeance by surprising him with leather lingerie and a strap-on dildo. Their passionate encounter ends with mutual pleasure, showcasing their continued choice to be together despite past challenges. Leather Lark defies conventional romance tropes by creating a love story between two killers who find redemption not in changing their nature, but in being fully accepted for who they are. Lark, the cheerful vigilante who eliminates predators with theatrical flair, and Lachlan, the reluctant hitman trapped in a world of violence, create a partnership based on complete honesty about their darkest impulses. What makes their relationship so compelling is how their darkness becomes the foundation for intimacy rather than a barrier to it. Unlike others in their lives who know only their public personas, they see each other's true natures, the good and the monstrous, and find acceptance rather than judgment. This complete acceptance creates a bond stronger than conventional romance, where partners often hide their flaws or try to change each other. Their journey from antagonism to genuine love follows an unconventional path, from Lark's escape from Lachlan's trunk to their marriage of convenience to their eventual choice to stay together after the external threats are eliminated. Each step forces them to confront their assumptions about each other and themselves, revealing vulnerabilities beneath their carefully constructed facades. The novel's exploration of justice, vengeance, and protection adds depth to their romance. Both Lark and Lachlan kill to protect others. She eliminates predators who might harm the innocent, while he initially kills because his brother's safety depends on his obedience to Leander. Their shared understanding of this protective impulse creates a connection that transcends conventional morality. Ultimately, Leather Lark is a story about choice. Choosing who to love, choosing who to protect, choosing who to kill, and choosing who to become. As Ethel wisely observes, being in love is not enough. Choosing love is what it takes. In a world of violence and vengeance, Lark and Lachlan choose each other, not despite their darkness, but because of their complete acceptance of it. Their love story isn't about redemption in the traditional sense, but about finding someone who sees your true self, even the monstrous parts, and chooses you anyway. In this dark dance of two killers, we find a surprisingly hopeful message about acceptance, vulnerability, and the transformative power of being truly seen by another person. It's a love story for those who've never quite fit into conventional boxes, a reminder that even the darkest souls can find connection if they're brave enough to reveal their true selves and lucky enough to find someone who accepts them completely. Beyond its unconventional romance, Leather Lark offers a nuanced exploration of justice and vengeance in a world where traditional systems fail to protect the vulnerable. Lark's vigilante killings of predators represent a form of justice outside the law, a response to institutional failures, like Dr. Campbell ignoring reports about Laurent Verdon's predatory behavior at Ashbourne. Her approach to murder, theatrical, often ironic, and completely without remorse, raises questions about moral absolutes. Is killing always wrong, or are there circumstances where it serves justice? By focusing exclusively on predators who harm the innocent, Lark positions herself as an avenging angel rather than a traditional villain. Her trophies, the macabre memento she creates from her victims, serve as physical reminders of justice served, transforming murder into a form of art. In contrast, Lachlan's relationship with killing is more complicated. Initially forced into violence by circumstances beyond his control, he kills without passion or purpose, simply following orders to protect his brother. His desire to escape this life represents a yearning for moral redemption, a chance to define himself beyond the violence that has shaped his existence. The Phantom, or Abe, represents a third perspective on vengeance, one driven by religious fanaticism and personal loss. His biblical justifications for murder create a twisted mirror image of Lark's vigilante justice, showing how easily the line between justice and vengeance can blur. Through these three different approaches to killing, the novel explores the complexities of morality in a world where traditional heroes don't exist. There are no innocent characters here, only different degrees of guilt and different motivations for violence. Yet within this moral ambiguity, genuine connections form, suggesting that acceptance of our darkest impulses might be more honest than pretending they don't exist. In the end, Leatherlark doesn't offer easy answers about justice or morality. Instead, it presents a world where good and evil blur together, where killers can be heroes and heroes can be killers, and where love doesn't require moral perfection, only complete acceptance of who we truly are, darkness and all.